You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. What is the significance of science and the presidency? No, I'm not talking about political science. I'm talking about deep, hard science. And over the past two administrations, there have been lots of transformations that bore directly on policies and laws that were passed in Congress and supported by the president. For the Clinton administration, our understanding of computers and information science transformed extraordinarily during those 8 years. Climate science changed extraordinarily during the Bush administration, beginning as something of a debate and ending with a global consensus. Now, as the new president is poised to take office, perhaps in, we'll get a result in the election and then inauguration is in January, what is the scientific issue that's on the stage that could transform itself similarly over the next 8 years? Today, we're talking with genetics and law expert Lori Andrews to find out what the president needs to know about science at the beginning and just what aggressive policies need to be explored. Lori has also written a new genetic thriller called Immunity. She's a genetics and law expert at the Illinois Institute of Technology, and she's here in the studio. Welcome, Lori.
Thank you.
And, you know, your book, Immunity, the idea of a popular thriller on genetics is actually germane to the question of whether science can deeply sort of embed itself in public consciousness. We're going to talk about that in a moment. But let's begin with the science and the new administration in January. Do you think genetics and biotech is the place where things are going to really transform, and then an aggressive, scientifically valid policy in the beginning is going to be really important to most Americans?
I think it will, and we've got to add nanotechnology to that as well, because we're really transforming things at the molecular level. We're looking at technologies, even some of the things in monoclonal antibodies that have never been used before. We don't have a regulatory structure for it because we're designing things to rewire the human immune system, and yet it won't work in animals, and so you can't do animal testing. We've seen a lot of problems in the last administration with religion governing what scientists could say. But I don't think even if we get a Democratic administration, we can be complacent, because commerce now is governing a lot of the research. It used to be taxpayer money was used to fund research at universities, and university researchers would go to jail if they used it for private gain. The rules changed with the passage of a law, and now we're seeing a lot more secrecy among university scientists, and it's hard to figure out who to turn to for a real opinion about science.
Well, let's tee up the genetic issue. I mean, here we are, a biotech which has all these utopian potentials and all these regulatory fears. Listen to this from the movie Gattaca.
Genetics, what can it mean? The ability to perfect the physical and mental characteristics of every unborn child.
And then there's this view from a protester in California in 2001.
There are early studies showing that a lot of the genetically engineered food causes cancer, infertility, birth defects, autoimmune disease, severe allergic reactions.
Politically, how do you navigate those poles? They're extreme and wide apart.
Well, I think we have to ask ourselves three questions as a society. How good are the technologies? Even if they're good, should they be used? And how do they change cultural concepts? So let's think about genetics, since you just brought that up. The how good is it came out in the first OJ case. You know, can we use forensic DNA testing to really identify people? But even if it's good, there are certain situations where we have to think about whether we should use it or not. If we find out that a 13-year-old girl is not really the biological daughter of her mother's husband, the mother had had an affair, do we take that 13-year-old away from the only parents she knew and give him back to a stranger because of the biological link? And I think we've been so seduced by technologies, we're applying them prematurely and without the sort of oversight. And then the third level of question is, how does it change cultural concepts?
Well, it seems to me that the OJ case really botched it, in the sense that the popular understanding of DNA was set back, in that this case just became a political firestorm. How is the federal government supposed to sit in the middle of all this and say, these are the technologies to watch, these are the things that are too politicized, these are the places where you should legitimately be scared?
I think we have to find some other cultural value than the cure approach. I find that any new technology, if there's any little hope it will extend the lifespan, we in the United States embrace it without putting a mechanism in place for follow-up. I mean, there have been recent court decisions where judges have actually said the FDA can no longer protect us. You see drugs going on the market and then being recalled. And so I think we need some monitoring of technologies. And we have to be skeptical when we hear that initial cure motif. And I think a historical perspective would help us to look at what happened to all the things we were promised. Gene therapy, what went wrong there? Fetal tissue transplantation, what went wrong there? So we're not seduced by each new technology. We need follow-up. We need a history of it.
So the mission of government should be, we need to know about this rather than we're going to find a cure for you kind of idea.
Right. That cure language just swamps any other cultural value.
Is there any agreement, though, among the science world that that's exactly what needs to happen, that there's oversight and this cautiousness in applying and using some of these developments?
I think right now there's so much of a chance to commercially benefit that we don't have neutral scientists we can turn to anymore. Columbia University, researchers there actually found a test for a certain enzyme, but also learned a biological existing fact that a high level of the enzyme was related to a vitamin deficiency. They patented that fact, and now there are lawsuits against doctors for even thinking about that fact, people from writing about it. We're seeing basic science being commercialized. A researcher at Yale University was shut down who had research on breast cancer because a company claiming to own the breast cancer gene. So commercialization needs to be, you know, stripped away a bit so we can find people we can rely on.
Well, certainly something to watch is when the new administration names its science advisor, and you know, maybe someday it'll be a cabinet level position. Maybe something else to watch is if the sales of your book Immunity go through the roof, perhaps there's hope that people will begin to understand some of these issues. Is that your mission, partly, aside from selling books and out of academia, which is driving you crazy?
No. What happened is that I would win these pro bono cases and the institution I'd sued would just change their informed consent form, or I'd go to Congress with people who lost their insurance and employment, even though they were healthy because they had a gene related to a certain disease and might cost more in medical care later.
So you're kind of the Grisham of biotech legal cases.
And I was frustrated by the traditional means. So you're right. I'm taking it to the street. I'm bringing these issues up in my mystery books.
She fancies herself a Grisham, but she is, in fact, Laurie Andrews, law professor in Chicago and director of the Institute for Science, Law, and Technology at the Illinois Institute of Technology. Her new book of fiction is called Immunity, and she'll be reading at Partners in Crime here in New York tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Thanks so much for joining us, Laurie.
Thank you.